It's 1991. Soundgarden releases Jesus Christ Pose, and it's getting a lot of attention. But maybe not the attention they wanted. The music video was banned by MTV, and they were receiving death threats on their UK tour for being perceived as anti-Christian. But they've got a new album on the way, dropping September 24th. Or at least it was supposed to. Production delays bumped Bad Motorfinger back a couple weeks. Instead, dropping September 24th, 1991, was an album called Nevermind and another one called Blood Sugar Sex Magic. You could say Soundgarden was outshined. But it wasn't all bad for Bad Motorfinger. The success of Nirvana brought lots of attention to the Seattle scene, and soon another Pacific Northwest band would share in their spotlight. It was Pearl Jam. 10 started off with a slow burn, but by the end of 1992 was huge, just as big as Nevermind. And it's not that Bad Motorfinger wasn't a success. Compared to their previous albums, 1988's Ultra Mega OK and 1989's Louder Than Love, it was a huge step up for the size of Soundgarden's audience, just not on the same level as other alt-rock bands breaking through the hair metal glass ceiling in 1991 and into 1992. 1994, however, Soundgarden would release a juggernaut of an album whose shadow still looms large over rock radio. Today, on album anniversary, we celebrate Super Unknown. This was, at one point, my favorite album. I don't know when or why it stopped being my favorite album, or even in my top 3 or 5 or 10. Like, if you asked me at any point in my teens what my 3 favorite albums were, Super Unknown and Dookie would always occupy 2 of those spots. The third one, I don't know, would be whatever I thought of in the moment. And I don't think I ever fell out of love with it, but I do remember reading an article, you know, I want to say Spin, it might have been Enemy. It was a re-review of the album for its 10th anniversary. I was 21 and I wanted to be cool. And this re-review basically said Super Unknown was not as heavy as they remember, not as good as they remember. And maybe that changed my perspective. Don't let some pretentious dummy who wanted to be a musician but couldn't, so they write reviews tearing down other artists, change how you feel about something. Though I think why the article hit home was because we were in the middle of the new metal era, and Super Unknown, in comparison to what was being played on mainstream rock radio at the time, just wasn't as heavy as I remember. Topic-wise, very heavy. Substance abuse, suicide, depression, revenge, fear, loss, death, and a sound that matched the darkness of the lyrics. But yeah, not as heavy as I remember playing that cassette for the first time and seeing the look on my parents' faces, the look of what did we just buy for them? It was the 37th annual Grammy Awards held on March 1st, 1995, almost a year since Super Unknown entered our lives. I was a child watching this with my parents, feeling vindicated because the album that they do not like won not just one, but 2 Grammys, Best Hard Rock Performance for Black Hole Sun and Best Metal Performance for Spoon Man.
Vindication!
We won't talk about them losing Best Rock Song to Bruce Springsteen and Best Rock Album to the Stones. I don't know if the band felt this way, but from the outside, it felt like the success of Super Unknown was a sort of sense of relief for them. When they signed with A&M Records, there were high expectations out of Seattle, but also some of their original fan base wasn't impressed. But that comes with the territory with the indie punk rock scene. You try to make a living off of your art, you're going to be labeled as a sellout. Guitarist Kim Thayil told Guitar World magazine in 1995, "Our fans came from the punk rock crowd. They abandoned us when they thought we sold out the punk tenets, getting on a major label and touring with Guns N' Roses. There were fashion issues and social issues, and people thought we no longer belonged to their scene, to their particular subculture," end quote. I went over the whole sellout thing in the Dookie episode, and I'm not going to do it again for at least 5 episodes. But I guess the big difference between Soundgarden and Green Day in their major label debuts is that Soundgarden's wasn't successful. So the sellout label didn't really stick. Louder Than Love did get a Grammy nomination and got the band onto the Billboard 200 album charts, but never cracked the top 100. It was 1989. Mainstream rock was still very hair metal, but a change was coming. Through 1990 and early 1991, the seas were changing. The mass audience were getting tired of the hairspray, the pop disguised as hard rock, the makeup, the spandex, the gaudy clothing, and yet somehow still very misogynistic music. 1991, everything changed. It's the year that punk broke. To the regular, everyday person, it was a shock to the system. Nevermind, 10, Blood Sugar Sex Magik, Gish, At a Time, alt rock became mainstream seemingly overnight. Seattle was the epicenter. Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Alice in Chains, and Soundgarden, they were the grungy four horsemen of hair metal's apocalypse. And many thought the band with the dark, Sabbath-like riffs and the gorgeous frontman who had an incredible voice and was seemingly allergic to wearing shirts, or at least buttoning them up, would lead the way. But they didn't. Bad Motorfinger did well. But it wasn't Nevermind. It wasn't 10. 3 years later, though, for at least a little bit, they did feel like the biggest band in the world. I don't know if Super Unknown ever gets enough credit for how experimental it is. Songs like Black Hole Sun and Spoon Man and Fell on Black Days and My Wave have been played so many times on the radio that they're just kind of part of our lives now, right? Part of the rock music lexicon. We don't think of them as special. They're just there. They just are. But I want to acknowledge how different this album was when it came out. From odd time signatures to alternative tunings to using instruments that weren't just guitars, drum, and bass. 4-4 timing is the most common timing. It's used not just in rock, but blues, country, pop, funk, and even classical music. It's kind of the default. Super Unknown ventures away from that, not just on album cuts, but singles like My Wave, Fell on Black Days, and The Day I Tried to Live. Though it wasn't exactly a calculated move. Kim Thayil said in an interview with Guitar Player magazine in 1994 that they never considered the time signature of a song until after they'd written it, and said the use of odd meters was a total accident. Okay, so they didn't plan it, but they still kept it. And the tuning, oh, the tuning. Once upon a time, before everything was easily available on the internet for free, if you wanted to learn a song and didn't have the talent to learn it by ear, you can't see me, but I'm pointing to myself. I did not and do not have that talent. You'd learn the song through a guitar tab, which is also much easier than learning the actual notes. It would show you in a diagram where you physically put your fingers, which fingers on which strings on which fret. And you could get those guitar tablatures, that's what tab is short for, by the by, usually one of two ways. You could buy a songbook that has the whole album transcribed, but those weren't cheap, or there were magazines. Do I have to explain what a magazine is? If you're listening to this, you can't be that young. There were guitar magazines like Guitar World, Guitar Player, Guitar School, Total Guitar, and I'm pretty sure there was one just called Guitar. Really, some on-point branding back then. They'd have articles and interviews and lists and reviews, but most importantly, they had guitar tabs of 3 or 4 songs, 2 of which you might actually want to learn. And you get a guitar magazine that had a Soundgarden song, and you try to play one of the songs, and it sounded nothing like your cassette or CD, and you'd wonder what you're doing wrong because your fingers are where the tab says they should be, but then you notice at the top where you skipped over that you have to completely change the tuning of your guitar, and not just one string, but most of them, which made chord shapes much easier, but also was a pain in the ass to do for just 1 or 2 songs. And you wonder to yourself, is this band lazy or are they geniuses? And honestly, probably a bit of both. I don't know the last time I listened to Super Unknown in its entirety. Probably May of 2017. And the final song of the album just hits differently than it did before May of 2017. Let's be real, any song with Chris Cornell's voice hits differently since then. Spoon Man was the lead single hitting radios on Valentine's Day of 1994. The album was released on March the 8th. It was a hit right out of the gates, debuting at number one on the Billboard charts. Not just the rock charts, the overall Billboard album charts. And not just a commercial hit, but a critical hit as well. Glowing review after glowing review. Soundgarden was the biggest thing in rock for at least a month. And if you know the story of 1994, you know what's coming in April. All right, my guest today, one half of the Graham and Dan show on Wolf Mornings on 106.9, The Wolf in Nanaimo. Graham Tate, buddy. Hey. Thanks for joining me.
Yeah, thanks for the invite, buddy. It's been a while.
Yeah, it's been too long. My former co-host, when we were at BCIT together, we had a little afternoon show called, was it the Ed and Graham show or the Graham and Ed show? I can't remember.
Oh, God. That was too long ago.
Too long ago. We're too
2008?
Old now. But, yeah, something like that. And this band, Soundgarden, a band that both, you know, meant a lot to us growing up, and a band I'm sure we didn't think we'd ever see perform live. And somehow, how many times have we seen them together? Just the one time? Or?
I think once. I've seen them twice.
Okay.
You and I saw them at Rogers Arena in Vancouver.
Yeah, I think that was with Queens of the Stone Age.
Queens of the Stone Age, yeah.
Which, awesome.
Yeah. I saw them again at the Queen Elizabeth Theater, I think a few years down the road after that. And I've seen Chris Cornell solo like a bunch of times. Saw Audioslave once, so but yeah, Soundgarden twice.
You didn't see them at Pemberton? I think it was 2014.
I didn't make it up to Pemberton, no.
So I was watching a whole bunch of interviews and videos kind of preparing for this. And there was an interview Chris Cornell did, like, I guess 10 years ago with K-Rock. They were celebrating the 20th anniversary of Super Unknown. And he was talking about, like, this tour they're doing with Nine Inch Nails. And I'm like, oh, that would have been a cool tour to check out. That's two of my favorite bands on tour together. Then I'm like, wait, 2014? Oh, that would have been Pemberton. That's when I also saw Nine. Oh, I did see that tour. Never mind.
It's a music festival. It's easy to forget some of the stuff you do at music festivals.
Now, do you remember the first time you listened to Super Unknown, and when was the last time you listened to Super Unknown, aside from when I was like, hey, bud, do you want to do this podcast?
I don't remember the first time, only because when it came out, I was, at this point, I had discovered, like, grunge, yes, but I was very much in the Pearl Jam camp and listening to 10 religiously. But also Dookie and Smash, because those came out the same year as Super Unknown. So those two, like at the time, were what I was listening to nonstop. And then Super Unknown would have been a couple years down the road, actually, probably.
Okay.
I think I actually didn't really get into Soundgarden until Down on the Upside came out. And I remember,
really? Okay.
I'd heard them, but they just, for whatever reason, didn't grab me at that time because I was so into other stuff. And then Burden in My Hand, I remember seeing the music video for that going like, I gotta give this band a chance. And then so go back to the discography and do, you know, Bad Motor Finger and then Super Unknown, and then it's just like, okay, I was stupid, how did I miss out on this for so long?
I remember like the first time listening, I don't remember like the listening to the album, but I remember discovering Black Hole Sun for the first time. It was like a basketball game. It was like on the basketball team. We're sitting on the bench, and my classmates CJ and Brian kept on singing, Black Hole Sun, won't you come? And you like, as you do as a kid, just sitting on the bench, I'm like, what the hell is that? Like, you wouldn't know. Because I was like, I don't have any older siblings, but both of them did, right? So they get like the music way before we did. And it was just like, oh, what is this song? And it was like, I listened to the album. I was like, oh, what is this? It's dark and it's awesome.
I definitely remember the music video for Black Hole Sun. And I think maybe that's what threw me a little bit, because I like the tune, but I'm like, this band seems weird because the video is so weird.
Yeah.
And so that I didn't, it just took me a couple more years to get into them.
When was the last time you remember listening to this album?
Well, I'm not including the one that after you, because I just did. But I was probably 6 months ago.
Okay, so not that long ago.
Yeah, not that long. I tend to go through kicks with bands that I like, and I'll just like run through their whole discography for a week or two and then move on to whatever grabs me next. I do that with Alice in Chains like all the time.
See, at points of my life, this was my favorite album, right? Or at least in, like, in the top three, right? If you're going to ask me like my three favorite albums, it's like Super Unknown, Dookie, and something else. I don't know, whatever's top of mind at the time. But it hasn't been my favorite album for a long, long time. It hasn't been like a top three. And I don't remember the last time I listened to it. And just listening to it this time around, there's so many songs that I was like, oh, man, that's on this?
Yeah.
Oh, I forgot I liked this song. And like other songs that are just, you know, because like if you look on Spotify, it'll have like a green check mark if it's like on another playlist. And a couple songs weren't on. I think it was like Mailman and Fresh Tendrils weren't on any other playlist I had anywhere on Spotify. And those are like the songs I listened to first. I was like, why don't I have these on another playlist? These songs are awesome.
Mailman is one of my favorite tracks on the record. And when they played it at that show that you and I were both at, and it was a song I did not think that they were going to do. Just because it wasn't a single.
Yeah.
It wasn't, I think, one of the better known tunes from the album. And so when they went into that riff, and it's a heavy riff too. Mm-hmm. Just like, I think I remember looking at you just going like, oh shit, like we're doing Mailman. Yeah.
Amazing. I love it. What is your favorite song on the album? Is it that God. Or?
It bounces back and forth between Mailman, The Day I Tried to Live. Sometimes it's My Wave. That riff is just so good.
Yeah.
And then there's times where I could listen to Like Suicide just over and over and over again. It's such a great song. And especially the acoustic version. I know it's not on the record, but the acoustic version of Like Suicide is so beautiful. The two guitar parts in it, it's just, gun to my head, I'd have to say probably Like Suicide.
Did radio ruin Black Hole Sun and Spoon Man for you?
maybe a little. I don't know if we played Black Hole Sun this morning. I may have blacked out if we did, but we do play it a lot.
Because if you asked me, like, you know, 30 years ago, 25 years ago, what are my favorite songs on the album? It's probably those two. And now I can't do it. Like, Day I Tried to Live has been my favorite of that album for 20 years, probably.
Yeah, sometimes I'll, and don't tell the people who schedule the music on my radio station, I'll sub out Black Hole Sun for Day I Tried to Live just because I need something a little more fresh. Yeah, I mean, they get played a lot. I mean, it's like that with a lot of songs. I mean, Smells Like Teen Spirit's probably the best example of that. But, you know, it depends because sometimes, even though I've heard the song hundreds of times, if not thousands, every now and then you'll hear it and it hits you just a little different and then you remember why it's such a great song.
Yeah.
And then you just, like, you can just enjoy it.
I think that was, like, with me listening to this album for the first time in forever, just, like, because I guess maybe I just listened to it so often that listening to it again for the first time in years, I was like, what is, oh, yeah, Head Down? Oh, my God, I love this song.
Yeah, it's nice to, yeah, 4th of July, too, like, it's such a great album.
Is this Soundgarden at their peak?
Yes. Not that Down on the Upside was worse, but I think they were still ascending after Bad Motorfinger. This album, I think, was just a little more complete. Maybe, I guess, you could tell that the production is just a little bit different. Like, it's just a little more polished than Bad Motorfinger was. And I love that album too. But yeah, for me, this is the holy grail of Soundgarden albums.
Is it a timeless album or is it an album of its time?
I think it's both. Okay. I think it was the perfect representation of what was going on at that time. And in 1994, I was 11 years old. I mean, like I said, I remember Dookie, Smash, and this album wasn't on my radar at the time, but I know how big Black Hole Sun was and how big the band was. And then being able to look at it now with some hindsight, yeah, it's a timeless album. It's one of, for me, top five of the entire decade of the 1990s.
Yeah.
I mean,
I wonder, if you handed this album to a kid who's like 14 years old today, would they come out with, oh, this is amazing? Or would they be like, what's this old classic rock?
Oh, it's so hard to remove myself from that. I don't know. It kind of seems like what is old is new again in a lot of aspects. Okay. There's a lot of, like, you're seeing like Creed making a comeback right now.
Oh, I hate it so much.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. Well, Limp Bizkit's still doing their thing. And I know that's a few years after Super Unknown. But I think if you had a kid who was into rock music at all, in like today's rock music, I think they might be a little thrown off at first because it is a heavier album than I remember. Like, I, listening back to it, I was just like, oh, this is a heavy album.
Really? Because I remember, 10 years ago, 20 years ago, talking about how this album wasn't as heavy as they remember. Yeah.
Really? So many of the riffs, like, I mean, Mailman and Let Me Drown, and like, to me, Soundgarden and Alice in Chains in particular encapsulated more of what grunge sounds like to me, as opposed to Pearl Jam, who Pearl Jam's my favorite band, but they're a blues rock band, essentially. Nirvana kind of had some punk elements to them, and Soundgarden did in their earlier days, but like, to me, Soundgarden and Alice in Chains, like, they sounded grungy.
Yeah.
Not to describe the scene, but the sound of the music that they created. So that's kind of, I mean, I'm trying to think of a band today that, like, could even compare with,
yeah, because, like, they at the time were like this, I feel like a lot of the reviews said, like, it's like this weird mix of Zeppelin Sabbath, right? Like, Chris Cornell's voice is Robert Plant-ish, but, like, the darkness of the tones, the darkness of Kim Thayil's guitar was kind of like Tony Iommi's, kind of looked like Tony Iommi's guitar as well. I don't know if there's, like, that band today. I was about to say, like, maybe Mastodon, 20 years old. They're not exactly new.
Yeah. Well, but I mean in the popular culture of it too. Yeah. I mean, yes, there's plenty of heavy bands out there, but like bands that kids are listening to that maybe rock radio should be picking up on or already are. I don't think there's ever going to really be another Chris Cornell, to be honest. I mean, that Adonis, you know, figure, great looking guy with the voice that could go from so many different low levels and his high octave range, which he explores like top to bottom on this album. I mean, I hope we get another one of those, but I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, we'll see. One day, hopefully.
One day, I'm sure. The second coming. Actually, it's kind of funny because so Cornell passed in May of 2017.
Yeah.
And my son, my wife was pregnant at the time, and we knew we were going to have a C-section.
Mm-hmm.
And it was scheduled for Chris Cornell's birthday.
Oh, wow. Okay.
July 20th. And so I was thinking in my head, my son is going to be the reincarnation of Chris Cornell. And then we had to end up going in early, and so he was born 3 days earlier than that. So at the time, I was kind of like, damn it. Like, it would have been so cool to have.
We were going to name you Cornell and everything.
Yeah.
You ruined it.
You were going to be this great singer. No, just kidding. But I had a little running joke in my own head for a while that he was going to be the second coming of Chris Cornell. Maybe he will. We'll see.
Graham Tate from The Wolf in Nanaimo, 106.9. Graham and Dan in the mornings. Hey, buddy. Great catching up.
Yeah, it's good to see you.